Welcome to the How the Why. With John Barrett Ingalls. Exploring and celebrating the creative process and the creative purpose of authors, editors, and artists that make up and inspire the Black Hill Press family. Black Hill Press is dedicated to the novella. We believe a great story is never defined by its length. Let's get creative.
Welcome to the How, the Why, brought to you by Black Hill Press. I'm John Barrett Ingalls, and today we are connected with Chad Prevost, managing editor of CNR Press. Is that the right title? I just made up a title for you. You're also an author and a poet and a blogger and a lover of literature. I'm just giving you a bunch of titles now. Chad, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, John Barrett.
Absolutely. So again, you are a lover of literature in this world, and you've thrown yourself right into the middle of it. But do us a favor and tell us a little bit about how you came into this world. So I know you started, I mean, not obviously we could go all the way back and came into the world, but how you came into the world of literature and sought it out as your life.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. The 35,000 foot view is I was born in Northern California, and I am the firstborn of a couple of ministers. And so my parents kind of moved us around a lot. I have one younger brother. And we moved around a good bit, and my dad was a pretty intense guy. Although they were always moderate Baptist and humanists, I would say, but pretty conservative. And that was how I was brought up for the most part. But I remember when I was 10, I kind of wanted to be a writer. In fifth grade, was drawn to storytelling and actually even magazine production. I would like make a little magazine called Smiley Magazine. but I don't know. I think a lot of the journey I've been on has been like an identity thing. It's like, well, what am I going to do? And when I get serious about what, my life, when I graduated from college, I did not know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to work in the traditional sense. And I'd been kind of surrounded in this, my models, everybody I knew were pretty much ministers. So I basically was like, I think the next step to do is go to seminary and process this, figure it out. At the time, I was convicted that it was my call and that I was going into the ministry. But those 3 years in Waco, Texas, at Truett Seminary at Baylor, were really transformative for me. I got really serious. I was really hungry intellectually, and I processed a lot of it and got a much clearer sense of who I am and how I feel about religion. But the whole time was a struggle because I constantly was like, I want to be a writer, and I was taking creative writing electives, but kind of in a way, I suppose, falling behind people who like knew right then they were going to go be writers.
Right.
So anyway, a long story short is I then did go. I enrolled at the Georgia State MFA program when I was 28 or 9. I can't remember exactly, but like getting to be kind of a late bloomer for some of this. And that was, you know, and that ended up being a PhD in creative writing, and that was a 5-year process there in Atlanta. I don't know. I guess that led me to, you know, I was married. We had a young kid when I was graduating, and I was teaching wherever I could, and it led me to, you know, accepting a tenure track job at Lee University, which is about 40 minutes from Chattanooga. And my wife and I knew we loved Chattanooga, so I was going to make that commute. And Lee was a really cool place in a lot of ways, but it was really religious, and I thought they were more moderately religious than they turned out to be. And after 5 years of intense tenure track teaching and work there, you know, I was finally glad to leave. So that's part of my process, man. I was a professor for 10 years, you know, before Lee and a little bit after. And finally in 2010, I kind of took the leap of faith and was like, I'm going to figure out another way to live in the, you know, like basically the question for me all along has been, how can I be a writer and do this thing that feels like it's like what I'm supposed to do, and also though be connected to making kind of a meaningful living.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's been a lifelong thing, but
for so many of us.
Yeah, and I think it's so. Maybe I just gave you a little bit too much life history, but I think that's where seeing our press. Go ahead.
No, it's perfect. What? That's exactly what, you know, I wanted to lead right into the foundation of CNR Press.
Yeah, I started it in about really, I think the concept and the official, like getting the 501c3 nonprofit, I think that happened at the very end of 2006, where I was kind of like I still taught at least for a couple of years after that, but I was kind of anticipating, like, this isn't quite it, and this is what I want to do. I want to, you know, engage myself in a literary labor and doing stuff that I, you know, producing stuff that I care about and, you know, I think is meaningful, but at the same time, it does need to make at least a modest salary.
Right.
And that was
family.
It. That was like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So it's got to make, and with that in mind, and with no, like, really any kind of real financial anything, it was just like, let's tear in and give it a shot, you know, kind of just one step at a time. So originally it was just poetry because, you know, it was like contest driven, and poets don't require agents or massive distribution and all those sorts of things. So for, you know, I think actually the first book probably didn't come out until 2008. A Southern California writer, poet, Michelle Bidding, was our very first title. But to bring it all the way up to where we're at now, it's developed into publishing fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. I think we earnestly got into fiction in 2009 and, you know, tried a kind of a literary nonfiction in about 2012, and that didn't work so well. And so we've kind of stopped that line, but we're still thinking that we recently got a grant for the Upstart that you had mentioned, and so that's kind of what started that. So that's an idea driven. That's supposed to be a topical, concept driven nonfiction, and so, you know, kind of let's see. The idea would be like visionary writers, you know, but also trying to do like things that like matter
right.
In terms of like social good.
I mean, you are called, you know, conscious and responsible. So is that kind of the through line for everything that is published, like promoting these ideas of being conscious and responsible and aware and having an impact? And
yes, definitely. You know, we wanted it to be like kind of a broad enough Name, and so we did. I mean, conscious, I think we meant like we're going to be socially and culturally aware,
right.
And responsible is like we're going to give, we're going to be attentive to our authors in all the good ways that one would expect a small nonprofit independent publisher to be. And boy, I don't know what your experience is, but man, every author, good or, maybe difficult, it's a universe of responsibilities.
Right.
And there's just so much to tend to, and it's really, it is really hard to please everybody all the time in all the ways,
right. And then every year you add new authors to that stable
and
still pushing the books from the first year. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a challenge and hats off to anybody who's going to undertake that.
That's right. That is right.
Now you have 4 awards that you offer to, publish authors and poets. You have 3 fiction awards, and then the Maxine Kuhman Poetry Award for publishing poetry. How did you choose to use that as a way of bringing in new authors and getting their work out there? And they're all named after can't say well known because they're amazing writers,
right.
But they are a little lesser known, my universe on the obscure side. Where did you come up with those authors to be the ones that you're going to name the award after? And then how did you decide that was something that you were going to use to bring other people in, bring new authors in?
That's
a big question. That's a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm going to be completely transparent on this because, it is what it is. And I'll reveal some of the thinking process behind it.
Sure.
And that is, so we did a big reading period. I can't remember how long ago, maybe a year and a half ago-ish. And we got, a pretty good amount of submissions. And we got so many, and at least for those 3 categories in fiction, we got so many, there were so many good things, coming in. And I got crazy, and I was like, I can't just take 1 or 2,
right.
I'm going to take these 3 because they just seem so deserving. And it was almost like organically, like it was almost retrospective. After those books were taken, we were like, well, let's give them, so it was just kind of a reading period. So, well, let's give them a little bit of credibility and let's, make it the winning of an award.
Oh yeah.
And so based upon sort of how those particular books were and their authors, I kind of actually, it was an exploratory process with the authors. I was like, who do you think this is influenced by the most and who do you like? And I kind of let the authors direct who they thought we might want to name the award after. Okay. Well, so, and then it was cool, and I felt really good about it at the time. Since then, I feel like I'm kind of like, what was I doing? Because I'm now sort of caught in like, well, I need to do, this is what we have to do now.
Yeah.
We have to have a Paul Bowles Award and a Theodore Dreiser Award and an Alex Laguma Award. So I haven't figured my way out of that, if I'm going to. But that's the honest, that was the way that developed. I don't think it's really led to selling a single copy more.
Do the books get the little gold, symbol on it with that award?
Well, I've learned that is something that you should do for your award-winning books. They look good on the Book Fair table with a gold label on them.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. It does. It does help sell titles. The poetry award, in a way, kind of happened organically too. Actually, the timing of that is going to be more permanent and established. The timing of it was like Maxine Cumin had just passed, and we got permission to, you know, sort of in honor of her to be able to, you know, name it after her. And, you know, so we had co-winners last year, Mike Dawkins and Richard Jackson. And we're going to, you know, I think because we did two in 2013, I might really just, I don't know. I think this is going to be 2015. We will open a reading period and we'll be clear about what we're reading for. And we'll publish, you know, maybe two to three new titles in 2016, you know, so that's kind of that plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about your the submission process and what you look for, aside from the awards, whether you're going to continue them or not. They're a little more specific about what you're looking for. But as a,
right.
a press in general, what do you look for in your fiction and in your poetry? Is there anything, I mean, or is it just quality and a message and a voice?
Yeah, other than saying what I think almost anybody would say, I'm trying to think of something. I mean, I think it continues to evolve, but I don't want that to sound vague. I do look for something that is, you know, like something that's authentically compelling and that really brings me in. That's probably, of course, the top thing. And then the second thing is, well, I really like how well connected is this person and what's their platform and, you know, what are the chances that, you know, going all this trouble to do all this stuff will result in, you know, more than just 200 or 300 copies being sold, but hopefully
right.
a few thousand.
Yeah.
And then maybe third, you know, I think with anybody's honest evaluation, we kind of look at the credentials, you know. Did this writer, you know, publish every single story in high-level magazines and, you know, go to 17 writing residencies? You know, that probably factors in too. Although, I mean, that's not as idealistic, you know, or as fair, but on a certain maybe professional level, I mean, I think that, you know, we take those things into consideration. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I mean, you couldn't publish every new author who just graduated with an undergrad, but how are
right.
you going to get those
and
books out there and those names out there?
Yeah, and with all of that said, John Barrett, I mean, with all of that said, like, most of the authors we've done, you know, a few have done more than two books. You know, we've done mostly first books, a lot of second books, and, you know, like, and then we'll have someone like David Slavic, who has, you know, he's, you know, written 105 books, so he's the outlier. And, you know, Richard Jackson's had a big career. Barbara Crooker's done a lot of poetry books, and a few others had done a few others. But, you know, for the most part, it's, you know, really helping, you know, establish and fortify some, you know, a lot of young writers.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, along with running this beast of a press,
right.
You know, and whether it's a small press, a large press, it's a lot of work.
Yes.
But along with that, you also have your own blog, which you've made a vow to yourself to post. But how long have you been working on The Hanging Chad, which is the name of your blog?
Okay, well, and actually one last thought before I forget about it, about CNR and about books and stuff, is that before we even go into the other stuff, I just want, it's like, you know, there is, though, it's, I don't know if you've experienced this yet, but it's sort of like you don't really know, and there is no magic formula for the book that just takes off.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and that is, I think, one of the interesting, and I don't know if it's discouraging or not, it just kind of is what it is, but it's the lessons that I've learned, and it's, I finally, you know, mastered getting incredible interior design and editing. We really started to get that down because I was like, okay, that's what's missing, you know? Mm. And then it was like, and all from there, it just really better look really, really, really professional and great. So then I was able to start paying really talented designers, and so now they look good too, you know? And even the distribution increased and got better too, although that puzzle hasn't been, you know, completely solved. But you know, you just like, even a well-connected author who's hustling, who cares, who's trying really hard, who you advertise for, may still not move many copies. But,
yeah.
but somebody else may just kind of magically, like, their book, it seems magical because you just look up and there were another 100 copies moved here and another 100 there, and you just don't know how or why.
Or they end up in that one right hand of person who's going to, you know, sing the praises and we deal with that as well. People go out to readings and, you know, get reviewed and there's no magic bullet to that.
There's not. Let's see, Hank and Chad, I about this time last year I got I was like, you know, I was all into, like, I need to start doing the platform building. I need to, you know, establish a little bit more presence. I feel really disconnected as a writer. And I think that's what's been one of my big, for all that I love about CNR, is that I do feel like, you know, there was a struggle for the past 2 or 3 years of, like, this is really coming at the expense of my own writing. And I did begin to kind of resent, you know, like, I'm constantly promoting all these other people and I'm not even writing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm barely
was the whole point, was to find job that allows you to write and you know, makes that a decent income to be able to take care of your family.
Exactly. And what I've learned, dude, and I don't know if, like, but what I've learned is, like, if you really want to make it as a writer, you just have to write all the time, you know, because it just takes so much time. And I'd like to talk about that, but, so Hang and Chat, I'm into it, and I think I did it every day for maybe 4 months. And then it's like, okay, that is extremely tiring and not exactly, that's not quite exactly it either, you know?
Right.
I was stimulated by the ideas and by the challenge of constantly consuming these books and having something to say. And I got really, I was like, man, this is fun, this tweeting thing, you know, man, yeah, wow, this is cool. And you can program, you know, 20 tweets a day. But after a while, I was like, that is exhausting. And I'm still not writing what I want to be writing.
Right. Yeah.
So finally, that has come along. So the Hanging Chat, what I more ideally, it's going to be a weekly kind of thing on all the things that it says, because I do, like you said, I have a lot of interest on all kinds of fields are really fascinating.
I was telling you before we got started with the interview, I got lost in a wormhole, because even the design of the blog that takes you, you know, you read your article, you read your review on the book, and then it says, if, you know, other things that are similar, you're like, ooh, I want to go there. I just read this article about Alan Watts. Now I want to read about the creative process.
Oh, that's great, man. That's great. Yeah.
And I did get lost in your video game. You had kind of a little wormhole of video games, which I'm kind of a gamer geek too. So
that's funny, a wormhole. I know. Yeah, that was... let's see, and when did I get... Yeah, I did really get into the game idea. I read Reality Hunger by David Shields, and that book is just that nonfiction, innovative, nonlinear, you know, just like very concept-driven, trying to push the boundaries, really, really got me excited. And it's not just about games or how games intersect with narrative, but... That has led me to, right now I'm working on kind of a devil's dictionary type of thing for my nonfiction work. It's called the, I think it's right now the working title is The Incomplete Authoritative Guidebook on Authority. And it's like, it's just like, I just, it's incredibly fun. And I just have all these terms and of authors or just like terms that seem like they just kind of work. And I'm trying to, and it's about appropriation and how we borrow, and it's a dictionary, but I feel like it's going to pull you in and be like, just loads of ideas, you know, like a very subjective dictionary. And if I can share one thing that's really exciting is that, so I have been working on this one novel for years now. Originally, my very first conception of it was called The Narcissist, and then for a while it was called The Director of Happiness, and finally it's called The Arrival. And Monday, I finally got an agent for it.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, that's great.
Thank you. And he's excited about it, and he thinks that there are a lot of, like, female editors who will be excited about it, too. So
that's,
I'm making
very
a few...
Cool.
Thanks, man. I'm making a few minor adjustments to it, and, you know, that's what I've been... like myopically looking at all week is like just like every single bit of text in this novel that I've, you know, drafted like in the 30s or 40s at times, and just like trying to just get everything just kind of, you know, just perfect.
Perfect, yeah. Now, so on your blog, one of your latest entries was about the five takeaways from daily rituals, but from Mason,
yes,
Curry's book, Daily Rituals and How Artists Work. And something that we've started here at Black Hill Press is this,
yeah,
thing we call routinology, where we kind of explore an artist's routine or a writer or whoever's routine of what they need to do every day to work and how they get that to work. Would you mind going over with everything that you're doing and trying to keep up the blog and the press and working on the book? Give us a little bit about your routine, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I love that, man. I saw that tab on your website. I didn't know what that meant exactly. Had I known, I definitely would have gone there because I'm pretty fascinated by it too. And yeah, that Mason Curry, have you read the book?
No, you know, our publisher has been telling me I need to pick it up. So now there's,
yeah,
two people. And I always say when, like, two different forces make you think of something and you got to follow up on that.
Well, as Mason Curry writes in the beginning of that introduction, you know, he says that in a way this is kind of shallow because we're just literally looking at, like, what, you know, the routines of people. But it does, there's something incredibly inspiring about it. And I read that this summer, and it just, like, lit a fire under me. I was like, no matter whether the person was wild and, you know, and drug abusive or very aesthetic, you know, and,
yeah,
and monkish or and everything in between, I'm just like...
Or obsessive.
There is
and, yeah, yeah, counting the beans and the coffee. I love that little part.
Right. So no matter what, I mean, there's a way to do this. Okay, for me, one thing that works really well, although, and I've been doing it for, you know, as consistently as I can for I don't know, several weeks now since the holidays and a few months before that, before the holidays, but it's getting up at 5. And 5 is kind of the magic number, and because I can still maybe somewhat semi-realistically really try to be sleeping at 9. But when I do that, when I go to bed at 9 and I wake up at 5 and can kind of pull that off, I get a lot of wonderful work done from 5 to 7. And then I go and I get up the kids.
Yeah,
and,
I was
going to
say, the kids are still asleep at that time.
Yes.
There's,
yeah,
no distraction.
Yeah, and I have, like, the super strong coffee, you know, made, ready, and just get a little something in the stomach and just go. And yeah, it's dark. There's that you don't talk to anybody else. There's this like sort of your mind's in a different place. It's barely up from dreams. That works really well. And lately I've just been working, since I'm not doing CNR like hardcore, you know, CNR stuff. I am just writing all day right now, and it's an interesting exercise. I mean, it is mentally, really exhausting.
Before you did this, what time were you waking up?
What's that?
Before you started the 5 a.m., what time were you waking up just normally on a regular basis? So
yeah, around? Just, you know, like, you know, I don't know, but, like, not getting anything done before, you know, just normal kind of waking
get
up.
Get the kids
getting
up,
the
yeah.
Kids. Yeah, yeah. So that's it's the 5 to 7 times that makes the rest of the day more productive, too, it feels like.
Well, you
and,
put in this, in the blog that,
yeah.
A lot of these people, however many people are in the book, start their mornings before anybody else wakes up. Like that's kind
yeah.
of like a common be that early to bed, early to rise, early bird gets worm kind of mentality, which is really
yeah.
difficult.
That's right. And it does seem in most. In that book, we're morning people, but not everybody. It could be all different times. I was gonna say, whatever my takeaway of that though is like whatever the time and however people construct it, it's like the idea of ritual. It's like have a certain time where you do certain things, however you achieve it, and that's. Pretty much working for me. It does get exhausting because after a while you stop getting, you know, enough sleep and you just need to not, I don't know how Stephen King writes 364 days a week. I mean, a year. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how to pull that off. But he's an outlier, I guess.
And he's Stephen King.
That's right.
I'm going through for the second time reading his memoir on writing, which I love and is inspirational. But I interviewed this girl earlier who wrote 900 pages in a summer. 900 pages in a summer, and she worked a full time job. You know, but you can't compare yourself to anybody else. You've got your own process, you have your own routine, you have your own habits.
Right.
It's going to lead you to.
Yeah.
Your own
and,
successes.
Well, and you know, and it's very possible that those 900 pages were really, really good, but it's far more likely that that's word counting and page counting, and you have no idea
yeah.
the quality of that. I wrote the first draft of, I guess, what I would consider maybe going to be my second novel. I wrote 100,000 words in, you know, maybe like 20 weeks.
Yeah.
A kind of normal interrupted time. I was like, I wrote 100,000 words, first draft, yeah, you know? But then I go back and I'm like, this thing stinks, you know? It's nowhere, and it's just nothing. There are so many places that are so incredibly vacuous and just awful and don't work, so.
That's, you know, November, they have National Novel Writing Month where you
Nano.
Write every day,
yeah.
yeah. And I look at these people that are writing 50,000 word novels in 30 days, and I applaud them.
Exactly.
There
is a great exercise.
I don't know how to do that, but, and I don't know how you do that and expect it to be good, but people do it, and it's amazing. I'm struggling with my 1,000 to 1,500 word a day routine. That's my goal.
I think that is a very prolific, you know? Like, if we really could produce 1,000 to 1,500 a day, you know, that's, wow. You take half that and,
yeah.
you know.
But, you know, that's like, that's the ideal, and then you end up writing, oh, I only wrote 3 days this week, or whatever. It's still progress,
right.
And progress is important.
That is right.
Chad, this was a great conversation. I thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us.
Well, you bet. Anytime. Thanks, John Baird. I look forward to following up with you a little bit more. And, you know, I'm sorry. Please feel free to edit. I think I've just kind of riffed. And
hey, we're still in it right now. And this is until we're done. It's all. I call it podcast gold. So.
Well, man, keep doing the podcast, man. That's awesome. There's a huge, huge growth period for this thing. So, yes, great idea. Look forward to talking with you more. Thanks for hosting me here.
This has been The How, The Why by Black Hill Press. I'm John Baird Ingalls. The show was produced by Kevin Stanek and yours truly, with production assistance by Sarah Becker. The music is Mea Lua by Bossa Zuzu. I wanted to thank everybody for your creativity and your inspiration, and to remind you all to keep making art. Thank you.